Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Floridians gave the okay to restore voting rights to most former felons back in November, but critics say the legislature is trying to drag its feet.
I will tell you that I only have two thumbs, and they're both down on this, and if I had more thumbs, they'd be down as well.
How far should the state go in deregulating certain industries?
So while I do specify finishes, I do. It's part of my job, and I do specify furniture. I have to think about other things as well, besides aesthetics.
And we'll get the latest on several big education proposals, coupled with a peek at the Senate's education spending plans. Plus, Governor Ron DeSantis and a few kids got a crash course in computer coding. I'm Lynn Hatter, and it's the third week of the annual Florida lawmaking session. You're listening to Capitol Report. Public commenters gave lawmakers an earful today when the implementing bill for 2018's Amendment 4 came up in a House committee meeting. The amendment allows certain felons to vote, but the argument has been which felons cannot vote. Blaise Ganey has more.
Amendment 4 has been one of the most talked about amendments from the 2018 gubernatorial election. It allows felons who have not convicted murder or a sexual offense to vote, as long as they've completed all terms of their sentence, including parole or probation. During a hearing on the bill to implement the amendment, members of the public expressed their worry lawmakers are trying to change the meaning of the amendment. Some call the proposal unconstitutional. Kara Gross of American Civil Liberties Union explains why.
We are deeply concerned that CRJ3 is overbroad, vague, violates the separation of powers, and extends far beyond what any reasonable person would conclude the voters intended when they passed Amendment 4, and therefore is unconstitutional.
The ACLU believes when trying to define what offenses are sexual for the matter of having voting rights restored, the legislature messed up.
It includes too many offenses in the category of felony sexual offenses, including offenses that are not sexual offenses as contemplated by the amendment.
Some of the offenses included are human trafficking and locating an adult entertainment store within 2,500 feet of a school. But Tampa Republican Representative James Grant, who chairs the committee, says he did the best he could because there is nothing that describes what a felony sexual offense is.
I would encourage everybody to remember that there is absolutely zero legal significance to the term felony sex offense. And yet voters walking into a ballot were forced to vote on something that said an exclusionary offense is a felony sex offense. I will give you an alternative. Had the language said sex offender, that would have meant something.
In the end, the bill made it through the committee with those sexual offenses still attached, but not without several lawmakers stating their discomfort with the bill. North Bay Village Democratic Representative Michael Grieco is one of them.
I will tell you that I only have two thumbs, and they're both down on this. And if I had more thumbs, they'd be down as well.
Plantation Representative Michael Gottlieb, who works as a criminal defense attorney, also doesn't like the proposal and believes it ultimately delays the implementation of the bill.
As a criminal defense attorney, I hear a saying all the time, and I've been a criminal defense practitioner for 25 years, and the saying is, justice delayed is justice denied. And what we're dealing with here is we're simply kicking the can down the street so that individuals who should have the right to vote are not getting that right to vote longer because we have once again muddied the waters as it relates to restitution. Court costs are not restitution. Fines are not.
The bill passed with no yes votes from a Democrat. I'm Blaze Ganey.
Florida lawmakers are considering a plan to deregulate a number of professions, including barbers, nail specialists, geologists, and interior designers. Regan McCarthy has the latest.
Interior designers do more than pick paint colors and drapes.
I work on courthouses, keeping judges, prisoners, and visitors separate so that nobody's fighting. I work on hospitals, keeping finishes from off-gassing, studying how to light patient rooms so that they're not in the dark all day long, but mimicking the outside environment. I work on office spaces. I work on gas stations, keeping the bathrooms, say, safe for children that want to go in, that they don't get cornered by somebody coming in a side exit or side entrance.
That's Rebecca Davidson. She says she came to work in Florida because it requires commercial interior designers to have a license. And she says that license serves an important purpose. Caroline Blake agrees. She has a master's degree in interior design and works largely on interiors for hospitals or medical care facilities.
So while I do specify finishes, I do. It's part of my job, and I do specify furniture. I have to think about other things as well besides aesthetics. I have to think about how will those things prevent infections? How will those things prevent patients from falling and being injured? And also, do they meet the fire rating requirements of these very stringent institutional facilities?
Blake says her license requires her to take continuing education classes.
What I do in my professional practice directly affects the health, safety, and welfare of the public and requires a knowledge of Florida law that is updated by the continuing education requirements of being licensed.
Blake says getting rid of the licensing requirement for commercial interior designers would be a mistake. But that's what Spring Hill Republican Representative Blaise Ngolia wants to do.
Not even half of the states in the United States regulate any form of interior design. Only 4 states in the United States regulate commercial design.
He says there's no reason for a special license issued by the state.
The degree that you get in interior design is your license. You don't need another layer in order to get your license. Get your degree. Start earning. Go to work. You don't need permission from the government to start earning a paycheck and your livelihood.
Ngolia says while the number of licensed professions is skyrocketing around the country, the practice has done little to improve the quality of service or safety for consumers. The bill has 2 committee stops left to go. A similar measure in the Senate has not yet been heard. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Haiti is running out of fuel. The country is having to find alternative ways to buy oil products. About a year ago, Venezuela stopped delivering cheap oil to the country. And it comes at a time when Haiti's political and economic crisis have worsened. Last month, protests erupted calling for the resignation of the country's president, Jovenel Moïse. WLRN's Tom Hudson spoke with Jacqueline Charles. She covers Haiti and the Caribbean for the Miami Herald.
This relationship between Haiti and Venezuela, there's no Venezuela oil coming to Haiti now, is that correct?
There's no Venezuela oil coming to Haiti or much of the Caribbean because other countries in the Caribbean were also receiving fuel from Venezuela. We believe the only country that may still be getting fuel may be Cuba. But yes, as a result of the end of Petrocaribe, that was the name of the agreement, countries, including Haiti, now have to go out on the spot market and they have to buy fuel, which means that they have to pay up front. With Venezuela, they could pay that price over 25 years and it was at a 1% interest rate. But today, they now have to have cash on hand. And it's having serious repercussions, not just in Haiti, but around the region.
Is there any other assistance as it relates specifically to the energy demand of Haiti that the UN is providing, that other, frankly, other petroleum producing countries are in talks with Haiti to provide credit, perhaps?
I mean, the fuel situation reflects the fact that you have a government that wants to monopolize the fuel imports that are coming into the country.
So are Haitians prepared to pay a fair market price?
Well, you know the irony again, because of this fuel crisis, they're paying three and four times right. the price of fuel on the streets and on the black market.
Okay.
But I think it all has to do in terms of how the government handles it, and you can't just fix one issue. You have a government agency that has been monopolizing and has not opened the market, but opening the market isn't going to also solve the crisis because the consumers are saying, we don't want to be beholden to the fuel companies and distributors, that there needs to be some sort of regulation. And so this is really something that they're going to have to address because it's now starting to have some serious impact.
That was WLRN's Tom Hudson speaking to Miami Herald reporter Jacqueline Charles. Still to come on Capitol Report, a bill preempting local rules on occupational and professional licenses has drawn the ire of LGBTQ advocates.
It matters less what the intentions of the crafters of this bill are. What matters is the impact of this legislation.
And Governor Ron DeSantis gets a lesson in computer coding.
You know, these skills are going to be suited for jobs going forward for the foreseeable future.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. I'm Lynn Hatter. An effort to preempt local occupational and professional licensing standards is bringing together strange bedfellows. Environmentalists, LGBTQ advocates, cities and counties, and even the professionals themselves are opposed to the effort, whose sponsor says he's just trying to standardize state rules. Republican State Representative Michael Grant recently introduced his bill this way.
Let me reiterate, or let me state at the beginning, it's not the intention of this bill to cause harm to any individual or group of individuals.
That's because ahead of a hearing on the measure, the LGBTQ advocacy group Equality Florida and its leader Nadine Smith held a press conference.
First and foremost, we are here to sound the alarm.
Yes.
HB 3 is a broadly written and very dangerous bill. And it matters less what the intentions of the crafters of this bill are. What matters is the impact of this legislation.
Grant's measure does not mention LGBTQ people, and there's no reference to civil rights issues or anything of the sort. So why the concern? Equality Florida Senior Director and former State Representative Joe Saunders explains. Take conversion therapy, for example. It's banned in about a third of Florida counties, and local ordinances tie into state licensure for mental health providers.
These laws simply say that if you are a licensed mental health provider with the state of Florida, and your ethical guidelines from the American Psychiatric Association or American Pediatric Association or American Psychological Association all denounce this practice that is equated to child abuse by those institutions, that the state and the licensure of mental health providers by the state is enough of a validator to say, in that space, in our community, this practice should not be allowed.
The same idea of unintended consequences holds true for other issues local cities and counties deal with, like putting rules in place for fertilizers, animals, and water quality. Rebecca O'Hara with the Florida League of Cities says the way the bill defines occupations and professions is too broad.
Ordinances that regulate escort services, yes, that is probably under this definition going to be considered an occupation or a profession. Ordinances that regulate bathhouses or massage parlors. Those are important. Why? Because those are intended to prevent prostitution, human trafficking.
And I've listened to the bill's sponsor almost on every occasion state this is not the intent of the bill. But not at one time did I hear the sponsor say this will not be the effect of the bill.
That's Democratic Representative Clovis Watson. Representative Grant says he brought the bill to address inconsistency, and he notes language governing businesses has been removed from the bill. He also says it's not his intent to take away powers from local governments nor override non-discrimination policies.
My commitment to you is that we will continue to keep our doors open, keep our ears open, and change this bill to get to the language that will allow us to make the chairman's story be a reality for every Floridian who wants to engage in those professions.
Grant says he recognizes the concerns and will continue to work on the bill. And to that end, the proposal is on its third committee stop but has not been scheduled for a hearing. A Senate companion bill has yet to get a hearing in any committee of that chamber. I'm here with Ryan Daly, who tackled two different education committees today, one in the House, one in the Senate. Ryan, let's start with the Senate Education Appropriations Committee rolled out a spending proposal. It's the first one that we're seeing for the upcoming fiscal year. Talk about what the Senate wants to put forward when it comes to education.
Right. Well, I think the big news coming out of that proposed budget rollout is the increase in per student spending. Overall, for the principal funding mechanism for Florida Public Schools, the Florida Education Finance Program, the Senate's proposing a $1.1 billion increase to that, bringing it to $22.2 billion total. And that increase to the FEFP would allow for a $350 per student increase. That's quite the leap from last year's increase, which got quite a bit of criticism from public school advocates, which saw just a 47-cent increase to the per student spending. Some superintendents of school districts around the state were pretty up in arms about that. So that represents a 5% increase in the per student spending, and the Senate is claiming that is the highest increase that they've put forward in 6 years.
Now, what would the Senate do with that per student increase and that overall $1 billion increase? Where is it going to go once it trickles down to the local level?
When you talk about per student spending, it's the idea that every student has a price tag. When you get into the charter school, the debate over charter schools, the kind of tagline there is that the money follows the student. Per student funding, that's how schools are funded based on their enrollment. So really, this is a big deal for individual schools and school districts around the state.
Now, what about teacher bonuses? We've heard a lot of talk about possibly increasing teacher pay. Some lawmakers want to do it with respect to bonus programs. Others, teachers groups, superintendents say put that money toward base increases. Does this budget allocate anything toward that?
So, yes, and it's actually pursuant to a piece of Senate Bill 7070, which is the big education bill that the Senate is trying to push through. That bill includes updates to the best and brightest teacher bonus program. That creates three separate bonuses, one of which is geared toward recruiting teachers for certain high-need subjects where there are teacher shortages, for instance. And the Senate is looking to fund that with $234 million.
Gotcha. Now, I know SB 770, that also came up today. Talk a little bit about what lawmakers did with respect to that bill. That's the one that would create sort of this additional scholarship organization to use public money to send kids to private schools.
Correct.
So talk about that bill.
Yeah, it's another state scholarship program. And it's that portion of Senate Bill 7070 is, you know, I don't think it would be hard to argue is the most controversial piece of the bill. It creates what's called the Family Empowerment Scholarship, that the gist of it is it would pay for low-income families to enroll their kids in private schools. Senator Manny Diaz is the big proponent of that. It also would reduce the wait list for the existing Florida Tax Credit Scholarship Program. There are some Democratic senators that are pretty big critics of this. They don't want to see it go through. Take what Senator Bill Monford said about it. That scholarship program would be funded by the FEFP, the main funding mechanism. Critics of it see this as another way to take public dollars and put students into private schools that would otherwise be in traditional public schools. And again, that goes back to FTE funding, per student funding, that when the student leaves the public school, the dollars leave the public school.
Gotcha. Now, the third thing that lawmakers did today over in the House, now moving over to that big House committee bill that deals with charter schools. Talk a little bit about what lawmakers are doing over there.
This is an update and an expansion of the Schools of Hope program, which came about in 2017 in Florida. And people in the capital city will remember that in relation to Jefferson County, one of our neighboring counties here, which was the first and likely still the only county in Florida to be completely a completely charter school district. What it does is it takes schools that are deemed persistently low-performing schools, and it allows a charter operator to come in and run that school. And basically, the changes proposed today, it would authorize a HOPE operator to operate a school of HOPE in a school district that is in a what this bill is looking to create as a Florida Opportunity Zone. That is attached to President Donald Trump's Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, which created these things, opportunity zones. This is a definition straight from the IRS website. An opportunity zone is an economically distressed community where new investments under certain conditions may be eligible for preferential tax treatment. So why is that significant? The process is that that certain areas have to be nominated by state officials and then certified by the U.S. Treasury as an opportunity zone. So Rick Scott, former Governor Rick Scott, nominated 427 opportunity zones in the state of Florida, which were certified by the U.S. Treasury as such. So obviously, if you're someone who doesn't want to see the expansion of charter schools, you're worried about that public money following the students, you're almost undoubtedly seeing this as what could be a pretty significant expansion of the Schools of Hope program and charter schools.
When the legislature passed the Schools of Hope bill, it also allocated money to it, about $140 million. How much of that $140 million has actually been spent? And do we know if charter schools themselves are actually taking advantage of this Schools of Hope designation to open up near failing public schools, which was the original purpose of this program?
And that's a great point, because face value spending, it doesn't look like it relative to what was allocated to the program. I think in both of its years of existence, it was funded at $140 million. And I think total to date, there's been only about $12 million spent on that. So again, you take that at face value, you would imagine that what was projected as far as charter school operators taking advantage of this, like you said, it looks like to the tune of $140 million, that certainly hasn't happened, about less than 10% of that.
Ryan Daly here on Capitol Report, talking education, charter schools, Schools of Hope, and a new corporate tax scholarship program. Ryan, thank you so much for that.
Thanks a lot.
And here's Gina Jordan with a look at what's going on tomorrow at the state capitol.
Here's what's coming up tomorrow in the Florida legislature. In the House, a bill creates a working group to study how state and local governments can benefit from using blockchain for record keeping, security, and service delivery. Blockchain is an open, decentralized ledger that permanently records transactions between two parties without needing third-party authentication. The state may revise its approach to homelessness by aligning certain requirements with the federal government. A bill would also increase the capacity of agencies to receive grant funds for the homeless and administer them. A task force would be created to consider policy proposals around putting assisted and independent living facilities into mixed-use developments. The full House will take up numerous issues, including a proposal to repeal the state's Certificate of Need program for hospitals, nursing homes, and hospices. Certificates are required for these providers before they can deploy building projects and many new services. In the Senate, a proposal would increase the threshold for passing constitutional amendments. Approval would be required from two-thirds of voters, up from the current 60%. A school safety proposal includes allowing trained classroom teachers to carry guns as school guardians. The bill is a follow-up to a safety law passed last year after the mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. Eligibility rules for Bright Futures scholarships may be changing. The scholarship program is funded by the Florida Lottery to encourage high-performing Florida graduates to stay in-state for their higher education pursuits. And an environmental proposal would create an initiative designed to help prevent and control red tide outbreaks, like the ones that plagued coastal waters last year. That's some of what's happening tomorrow in the Florida legislature. I'm Gina Jordan.
Finally tonight, Tuesday was coding day at the Capitol. Gina Jordan has more on the initiative to promote computer science education.
Kids are lined up at computers getting ready to show off their work to state leaders. The students, some in elementary school, are coding. Mary Snapp, Corporate Vice President of Philanthropies for Microsoft, says these are the skills of the future.
We need more computer scientists. We need more data scientists. And in the state of Florida alone, there are 8,000 computing jobs open. Not necessarily all for computer scientists. Some of them are for individuals who might have a philosophy degree or a poetry degree and take a one-year certificate class.
Coding is known as computer programming. It refers to lines of code that contain instructions for everything from websites to video games to cars. Hialeah Gardens Senator Manny Diaz chairs the Senate Education Committee. He has a background as a teacher and school administrator. He says kids are intuitively able to understand coding, but they need adults who can teach them.
One of the major thrusts that we have to have in the state is to make sure that we have our teachers trained properly to teach computer science. You know, 10 years ago when you talked about computer science, you were talking about a teacher who was basically teaching keyboarding and very soft computer skills. We have to make sure that the folks that we have in the classroom today are able to teach actual computer science to prepare these kids for jobs.
Governor Ron DeSantis says he's ready to put up the money for teacher training. His proposed budget includes the creation of a program to pay for training and bonuses for teachers who pursue certifications in computer science.
It's not just relevant if you want to work at Microsoft. Obviously it is. But a lot of businesses now that would not have 20 years ago been considered technology companies really have a huge technology component. Finance, product development, you name it. There is a technology and a computer science component. And so these are going to be jobs, these skills are going to be suited for jobs going forward for the foreseeable future.
DeSantis wants Florida to lead the way. His administration is promoting the importance of workforce education and technical skills. He's also calling for computer science to count as a science credit toward high school graduation. I'm Gina Jordan.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaze Ganey, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Lynn Hatter. Tom Flanagan will be back tomorrow. Join us each night for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org.